let it be known that British liberties are not the grants of princes or parliaments. That many of our rights are inherent and essential, agreed on as maxims and established as preliminaries even before Parliament existed. We have a right to them, derived from our Maker. Our forefathers have earned and bought liberty for us at the expense of their ease, their estates, their pleasures, and their blood. Liberty is not built on the doctrine that a few nobles have a right to inherit the earth. No! No! It stands on this principle that the meanest and lowest of the people are, by the unalterable, indefeasible laws of God and nature, as well entitled to the benefit of the air to breathe, light to see, food to eat, and clothes to wear as the nobles or the king. That is liberty. And liberty will reign in America.
Thank you, John Adams. And liberty will reign around the world and in Kanata. This is Radio Free Kanata. Welcome back. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. And unfortunately, my co-host, Ryan, will not join us today. He's listening in, but he's tending a sore throat. So we're all thinking of you there, Ryan. We'll have you back next week. We have today at bbsradio.com, Radio Free Kanata. We have two very important guests. Debbie, an activist from Winnipeg, who will be and is leading a campaign to expose child trafficking and child kidnapping by the police and the Child Family Services in that beleaguered city. And at halfway through the show, we're going to have Kevin Edwards coming on from the Wales Common Law Court, where he will also be talking about the kidnapping of children by the state in England. You can follow our work, Radio Free Kanata, at the Republic of Kanata website, kanatarepublic.ca. And just to remind you folks, in case you might have forgotten, I know I did until I was reminded, this Wednesday is July 1st, which is the unfortunate thing known as Canada Day, where we celebrate, or I don't celebrate, but some people do, celebrate the long-standing ties between the British monarchy and Canada. Well, we've got something to say about that, don't we, folks? This Wednesday, there are going to be folks across Canada who will be out there at the official Canada Day celebrations with our flag, the Republic of Canada flag. I just got an email from some folks in Regina who are going to take great pleasure in displaying the Republic flag at the Canada Day events. And we do have some flyers to hand out and other links to share with people. So if you want to hand out stuff and be, do some nice subversive activities midweek, please write to us, republicofkanata@gmail.com. We'll send you some flyers to hand out. And please film your actions. We'll post them up on our website and for the edification of everybody. Also, yours truly is just completing his latest mini work. It's not really a book. I've written a thing called The History of White People in Canada, and it's a deliberately satirical and I hope funny little poke at who we are. It's going to be coming out over the next month. It's about a 50-page little, it's not exactly a book. It's like a little, almost a comic book, because it's going to have some interesting stuff in it as well, images and that. So keep an eye open for that. I'll have more about that. And I'm actually going to read some excerpts from it over the next few weeks. So hopefully it'll entertain you. Before I bring on my first guest, I also wanted to remind folks that we have with us today our stalwarts in London, Ontario, who are going to be taking part in the show. That's Dan and Jonathan. They're going to be with us. They may even be with us now. I'll let them jump on in a minute. And also Carol out on the West Coast, Vancouver Island, so-called Vancouver Island. And also I wanted to just flag for people one final thing, that in the course of today, this program costs us $280 every month to put on. So I wanted to ask you again to continue to donate. You can hit the donate button at itccs.org, and this will go to the Radio Free Kanata costs of just having us on the air. Thank you very much. So let me now bring on Debbie. She's our first guest, and we're going to be talking about the situation in Winnipeg. Debbie, hello. Are you with us?
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's really good to have you on. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, you know, there was some stuff in the news, of course, but about this United Church minister, Robert Campbell in Winnipeg, who had been accused of having inappropriate contact with young boys in the congregation. But apparently, as tends to happen in that church, he was given a clean bill of health and he's back in the pulpit. And I know that you have a few things to say about that, but also the fact of how police are routinely going into people's homes without warrants, seizing their children, and even going into hospitals and seizing babies as part of this child trafficking network with the Child and Family Services in Manitoba. So could I ask you first to say a little bit about, you know, who you are and how you've been involved in this kind of activity?
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and the only reason why I started to get involved is because there were people that were close to me that were affected by Child and Family Services. They call it Child and Family Services here in Winnipeg. And the more that I began to talk with other people, the more people would start to tell me their stories. And also, when you join groups, you know, on social media, some people like to share their stories and some people prefer not to talk about it. So I do have some certain cases that I've been following, keeping in touch with the family members and just getting periodic updates in regards to what's happening to their families and how their life is going about, you know, trying to struggle through all these problems that they're having. And I have three separate cases that I would like to talk about today. And I'm not sure where you would like me to start. I can start with the CFS issue, or we can start with the Robert Campbell priest at the Westminster United Church.
Well, let's start with that.
But it all eventually ties in together.
Yeah, for sure. And let's start with that. Let's start with the Campbell case for people who don't know.
Okay, so Robert Campbell is a priest at the United Westminster Church. And the congregation had already had some complaints about this fellow and his inappropriate behavior. And what he was doing is he was saying inappropriate things, and this is what ultimately caused these issues to come to light. And obviously, parents are bringing their children into the church, and they have all different kinds of activities for the kids while they're doing their sermons and such, if anybody's ever been in a church. And so what was happening is he was making inappropriate comments to little boys that were around the age between 10 and 12, and even had said, and I quote, "He is oozing with sexual appeal." And he actually said this to a parent. And ultimately, this is probably what caused all of this to come out into the media. And the congregation had already felt some inappropriate things were going on. He also had taken two children into his office and closed the door for 45 minutes. And unfortunately, you know, the parents that are involved in these churches will cover it up because they don't want to be ashamed or be casted as an outcast in the church. And not to say that they're covering up, but in essence, that's what it is. I don't think they know how to deal with it. For whatever reason that they keep it behind closed doors is beyond my comprehension.
Right. Well, just a little. Can I just jump in with one little thing on
sure.
that? There's a standing policy in all three, the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches, when the lawsuits against them began over the harming of Indian kids. There was a policy that they adopted that is, whenever anyone was accused of anything, any clergy, the parents were silenced. It's the same policy of the Catholic Church of silencing the family when children are harmed. It's the same thing here. So in other words, the very fact that it wasn't talked about and the church did their own house investigation about it is proof that there was definitely something going on. Anyway, go on.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that, Kevin. That explains a lot to me, because I will not set foot in any church ever again. And so I'm glad that you did that, because I have not really been heavily involved in the churches the way that you have been. But I would never, ever leave any children alone at a church either. That's just my personal preference. But yes, it followed a formal investigation with a 27-page report by an impartial investigator, and that was completed in January of 2015. And the report was obtained by one of the media outlets here in Winnipeg, and basically it concluded that his actions and comments amount to sexual harassment. And they're trying to make it sound a lot less severe than what it actually is. Right. And his behavior of the sexual nature is known to be unwanted or unwelcome. So you see how nicely they put that, but they're not really coming out with, like, what did he do with those two boys in the room? Why did he have to lock the door? Why were they in there for 45 minutes? So it could be that they're silencing all of the congregation, but they have been trying to get rid of him, and I don't understand why the police are not involved. They should be involved. And it's like the church is doing their own investigation. It's the same as if the police are investigating themselves. You're not going to have anything that's fair.
It's like the TRC in a small way.
Absolutely.
The Truth and Reconciliation did that on a national scale. Now they're doing it in Winnipeg. I should tell you, Debbie, that I did... I have received a communication from a retired member of that church. Now, I don't want to say they're retired because they're old, but they basically resigned because they were so disgusted. And the email essentially said that there's more going on with the Campbell case than they've reported, that he's definitely...
Oh, I believe that.
That he's definitely harmed children, and they're concealing the whole thing.
Yes, I believe that, absolutely. It's only a matter of time before it gets out, and... I kind of wish that we had speakers on at the church on Sunday this morning while they were having their sermon, because I think that these families could possibly, like you said, they're being silenced. And the problem is that this is their group that they expect support from, and they don't have support outside of the church, which could very well be why they're so quiet. But, you know, the problem is we're all indoctrined to be, you know, civilly obedient, and everything you're supposed to do is to follow the law and, you know, be of good behavior and so on and so on. So a lot of these people are afraid to speak out, don't want to speak out for whatever reasons. I'm sure they have, but I'm sure there's a lot of shame and guilt that's going on in that church.
It kind of relates to the second part of this whole issue, which is how the police are actively seem to be working hand in glove with CFS to traffic and grab and kidnap children, basically. And maybe people know that since the Winnipeg police are not looking to do suspected child molesters at Westminster United Church, but are actively helping CFS, I think there's a climate of fear there, definitely, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. Yeah, it all ties in together. And I think what's happening is these wealthy pedophiles that live in the city are protected by the police. And the more people that I talk to, what I'm finding out is the police are actually calling CFS on these families. And CFS has the power to come into your to come in and apprehend your child, but they're supposed to do this with a warrant, and they're usually just showing up. And they find all these excuses. I've got it written down here. I'm going to go with case number 15. This family had six children, and one of the children was 18 and had a baby. So this mother was looking after six children, including the baby, and her son was in trouble with the law. And when the police came to their house, they demanded that she tell them where he was. And she didn't know where he was. And, you know, for whatever reason, whether she didn't want to tell him or she didn't know, you know, when a woman is looking after six, seven children, I think sometimes you're not going to keep tabs on all your children. So this boy is a little bit older. He's 16. So they run off and they go do things with their friends and get themselves into trouble. And so because of that, they came back within 24 hours with CFS, and they took all the children, including the baby, but while they were in there, they destroyed their home, they destroyed their property, they seized their vehicles, they seized their dogs, and left them with nothing.
Amazing.
And this is what they're doing to families. These people are struggling, trying to keep their family together, and they just pulled the whole rug out from underneath them. And how can anyone expect to get back up on your feet when you've just taken all your children away? And she's a grandmother. She's looking after her grandbaby for her young child that's had a baby. And go ahead.
No, well, I wanted to say if any of the other three folks on the air want to comment or ask questions, just jump in at any point. But I wanted to also flag for people that you had mentioned that they're actually going into the hospitals as well and seizing newborn babies.
Yes, there are women that are incarcerated, either, you know, during the time of their pregnancy or they're pregnant before they're incarcerated. So it definitely, if they're incarcerated, they have to go into the hospital. And in another case, this woman was in jail, and when she came out of jail, they actually had her in shackles when she was ready to have her baby. And
wow.
The only compassion that was shown to this individual was actually from the doctor or the anesthesiologist. And she ordered the bailiffs to take those shackles off because they are getting in the way of them trying to deliver this baby. And they made it seem like this woman was going to jump off the table and run away. And, you know, obviously that wasn't the case, but this is just the kind of torment that they put, the psychological torment that they put on individuals, on parents, mothers especially.
Right.
And, and if there's no support, if there's no family or support, that baby is taken. And then they go back to jail, and they have no power in jail. They need somebody to bring them money so that they can make phone calls. They're just completely isolated.
Yeah.
And chances are they never know that they'll never see that baby again. The baby disappears off the face of the earth. Nobody knows what happened to it. And this is the problem with CFS, is that they're not accountable for. They're constantly quoting confidentiality, and it's private and it's confident. It's a load of crap. It's just a way for them to not be accountable for the things that they've done. There's approximately 10,000 children in care in Manitoba, and that affects 20,000 parents, okay, because you need a man and a woman to have a baby. And in those 20,000 parents, the mother and the father, they all have extended families. They all have brothers. They all have sisters. There's grandparents. So we're talking about 100,000 to 200,000 people in this city. And our city is only about 700,000 people here. So
yep.
I'm thinking it's about a quarter to a third of the families in this province is being affected by CFS. And I believe if I could get all of these people together, we can definitely fight this. But it's a big fight.
We're going to talk about that, as a matter of fact. I'm going to have you on again in future shows, and we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts of how to organize families to resist this.
Yes.
Before I let the others ask you any questions, I had one final thing I wanted to share because it's very relevant. There's a policy in Canadian hospitals called the BFA protocol. This is a secret. It was revealed by a woman called Hannah Anderson, who in Vancouver. It's called Baby for Adoption Protocol. What they are the adoption agencies work hand in glove with the churches and governments and police, and they have a set of pre-orders. They have a number of babies they need every year, and they basically say to these churches and governments and cops, we need you to get a certain number of babies for us. And as a result of that, vulnerable women, especially single moms, are targeted and hunted, and they're criminalized so that they can then seize their children and traffic them to these adoption agencies. It's a whole system at work called the BFA protocol.
Absolutely.
When you're
and
a
they
pregnant
actually have
mother,
people working for them. Yes. Actually, just a couple of days ago, I was informed by another family that they found out that one of their friends, which is like a plant, one of their friends was going around and planting narcotics and pipes and all kinds of stuff in their home and in their yard, And then what they do is they run back and they inform the cops, and then the cops go and they, and this is, right. this is like a constant, like there's so much of it. I there's no way I'm going to be able to get this all in.
What I'd like to do is
tell you of a word that I came across, and it's called psychosema. And the meaning of this is a system of questionable actions that a social servant's agency or child protection service agency might utilize to achieve profit through the fraudulent means. And it's mainly categorized as an orchestrated assault. It's utilizing several methods of fraud, psychological operations, psychological intimidation, and other similar premeditated offense-based systems against a parent, a child, or a family. And a malicious social worker or other social service professionals, which are usually employed by CFS agency or a similar social service agency, are commonly identified as utilizing the system or methodology to achieve profit. It's usually implemented to deflect attention away from crimes that are committed by the said workers against children, and those children are sometimes canvassed for the purpose of profit. So there it's definitely a profitable business.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And this BFA protocol, it's in place in hospitals. And if you're a woman with a BFA on your chart, you're withheld certain drugs. You're given lactation suppressants. You're put through a system of psychological intimidation where you're convinced that you have to give up your baby. So it's a form of torture under international law, and it's a big industry. And this is the whole point. So we're seeing tips of the iceberg of that. Let me ask Lori or Dan or Jonathan if any of you have any questions.
Actually, yeah, I had a question for you. I'm from Ontario. We don't have Child and Family Services here. We have the Children's Aid Society instead. And I've come to learn that the Children's Aid Society is actually a private corporation that has no ties to the government other than they get funding from the government. Is the same true about Child and Family Services? Are they a private corporation as well?
That's a very good question. I don't believe so, because there are private agencies that are out there that it's similar to Ontario. So there are private agencies out there, but some of them are connected through the government, because the government provides the funding, and that's the whole key right there, is follow the money. So these agencies, I know of one particular woman, she is making $100,000 a year in housing disabled children, and they're hiring people that are that are not experienced, they don't have any knowledge or skills, and these workers are actually molesting the children. And sometimes it's even most of the time it's usually the foster parents that are doing that. So to answer your question, yes, there are private agencies. It depends on what agency it is, but if it's connected to the city, they've got more power.
And then I guess another question would be, like with all the crimes and blatant disrespect for the legal system and due process that Child and Family Services is exhibiting, how is it that you think that they still have such an untarnished, benevolent sort of representation with the general public? How do you think it is that they can continue to commit these crimes and then people just turn a blind eye and think that they're a fantastic organization that does nothing but look out for the welfare of children?
Well, I haven't met one person yet that actually thinks they're a fantastic organization. But what I do know is that back in 2007, between 2007 and 2009, this was an issue with Child and Family Services housing children in hotel rooms, okay? We all know what hotel rooms are meant for. And so Gord McIntosh was the minister at the time, and he said, yes, we're going to get all the kids out of hotel rooms. We're now in 2015, and guess what happens? They do a cabinet shuffle, they switch all the people around in the government, and then somebody new takes on the job. So the person in charge now is Minister Carrie Irving Ross. And she's already said that there's no more children going to be in hotel rooms. And this is where all the child trafficking is connected as well, because they've got kids that are high risk, that are runaways, and they're putting them in with kids that have not been subjected to that lifestyle. And this is how they're tying it all in together. There were two children in a hotel room with one of the workers. That child took his phone and videotaped the worker sleeping on the bed. And Minister Irving Ross said that no more hotel rooms are going to be used for these children as of June 1st. We're now at the end of the month, and they put an application in the newspaper requiring an administrative person for CFS at the hotel. I have never heard of a hotel. Like, hotels hire their own staff. I'm a little concerned as to why CFS is putting an application out in the paper for a job that to work for them in a hotel. So they're transferring the kids back and forth from Brandon to Winnipeg. They round them all up from off the reserves. They bring them into the city, and they're moving them around constantly around and around.
And Debbie, I know that you know, there's one thing that doesn't often come out. The government doesn't tend to publish the records of how many children go missing in the process. We know in England, and our second speaker, which you're welcome to stay on and listen to and participate, Kevin Edwards, in England, just 2 years ago, they admitted that over 600 children actually disappeared. They couldn't find them in the child's services.
And that's what happened to Phoenix Sinclair is the most talked about case. This was a little baby, and she fell through. They call it falling through the cracks of the system, but that's not really what it is. It's it's either the child is worth money or it's not worth money. It's a very sick, disgusting way of how they're doing it. And all the families have tried doing what CFS wants you to do. They make you jump through hoops. They make you go get blood tests. And even when you follow all their direction, the moment that you show any anger, all of a sudden you need help. You need this.
Right.
You need that.
You're criminalized.
So, yeah, you're criminalized, and then they start saying bad things about you. There, another case, for instance, is a gentleman. They were foreigners, okay? They were immigrants. They came here to Canada to enjoy their life. And what happened was the mother got very sick. She had a disease. She went into the hospital. And this poor father could not handle looking after his three children, okay? And I have to say that it is harder on men to look after children than the way it is for women. So what he did is he called CFS and he said, I need help. My wife is in the hospital. I need help with my kids. What they did is they came and they apprehended the kids. They took the kids without his knowledge. They'll come right to the school and they'll take them right out of the school. And see, it ties in with the school, it ties in with the doctors, it ties in with your welfare card, it ties you in with your driver's license, your health card. They know everything about what you're doing and where you're going or why you're doing it.
Debbie, we've got only a couple of minutes left before Kevin comes on. But I want you to stay on and listen and participate if you want. I definitely want you to come back next week again so we can go into especially exploring what can be done about it. We're talking about, obviously picketing Westminster United Church, also convening a common law court in Winnipeg to look into child trafficking and indicting these criminal agencies like CFS. So, I want your take on all that in the future when we talk about this more.
Yes, I can do that, Kevin. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, yes, and we'll talk more. If folks listening in want to get a hold of you, could I just get them to write to us and we'll pass on their names? Would that be the best?
Sure, yes.
Okay. Debbie, thank you, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. If you want to get a hold of Debbie and work with the group that is actually going to be planning some meetings very soon in the north end of Winnipeg to bring together people who have been victimized in this way by CFS, you can write to her care of Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata@gmail.com. Now, leading right into the next guest, we have Kevin Edwards from the Wales Common Law Court. And I've known Kevin for a few years. We've been sharing information. We've been on other radio shows together. And most recently on Freedom Talk Radio out of England. And Kevin was going to be talking about the Linda Lewis campaign, which is along similar lines of kidnapping of children by the police in England and the Wales Common Law Court. Kevin, are you with us?
I am indeed, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for coming on. I know it's been a few weeks since we originally promised you airtime, so I'm sorry about that, but it's good to finally have you on.
No problem. Pleasure's all mine, and thanks for the invite, Kev.
Now, could you tell a little bit about two things, the Linda Lewis campaign and also what is the Wales Common Law Court?
Absolutely. Well, the Justice for Linda Lewis campaign involves a mother who took her daughter to Florida in 1998 to seek medical treatment after being messed around, etc., in hospitals in the United Kingdom. And the fact that an illegal operation was performed in a hospital that had no license to do so, taking out a perfectly healthy appendix and leaving the girl with blood septicemia. This then became one massive cover-up where the child nearly died, and the parents and the grandparents obviously were getting a little bit distressed that the child was getting worse and not getting proper medical treatment, decided quite lawfully to take the child off to Florida to get additional medical care and a proper diagnosis in 1998. Now, as soon as they got there, the local authority, the council across here called Meath-Talbot Council, acted illegally and unlawfully, Kevin, by issuing a false passport in a different name for the child and sending two social workers across to America to literally kidnap the child from a sick children's hospital bed in Gainesville in Florida at gunpoint. After that, the child was brought back out of the United States 4.5 days later without any proper trial across there, without any proper paperwork, on a false passport. And 18 years ago, the child has never been, now an adult, has never been reunited with her mother.
What happened? I mean, can they do that under extradition laws? I mean, how exactly did that happen legally?
Well, it didn't happen legally at all, neither lawfully. We have been in contact again over the years with the Foreign Office in the United Kingdom and the Home Office, and neither of them have any record of the extradition of Linda Lewis's daughter. What they did was they went across their fabricated evidence to convince the Social Services Department in Florida that this child was under threat and the mother was falsely accused of being Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Now, it's been come up in several court cases that Linda Lewis has gone through over the years, Kevin, and it's been stated by three judges that Linda and her father and her daughter were in America perfectly legal and were under no restriction to travel at all from the UK. So this makes it quite clearly a case of kidnapping. We know from an attorney that Linda managed to get a short notice in Florida that 28 laws, a minimum of 28 laws, were broken in the United States. Now, a freedom of information that we put into the Home Office regarding extradition, the minimum that anybody can be extradited from the United States of America back to the United Kingdom is 6 months. And that's providing that the person to be extradited gives their consent, because normally it's a 12-month process.
Right.
But, you know, Meath-Talbot Social Services managed to extradite a very sick 12-year-old girl back into the United Kingdom in 4 days. So it's clearly a case of child kidnapping unlawfully, right, by a local authority.
Now, do you have a sense of why this really went on? I mean, what's the story here? What's behind it all, do you think?
Well, the story behind it is basically that the hospital that performed the operation that took out the appendix that was healthy had no license to perform that operation. Now, the reason they had no license at all, Kevin, is it was an old hospital that was being closed down with a new facility being built. We also found out at the time that the anaesthetist who was in on the operation had been struck off from the NHS in Nottingham 2 months earlier. And, of course, the hospital had no insurance. The local health authority had no insurance. And as we see the corruption in South Wales in particular sort of evolve, the surgeon who performed the operation was a chap called the name of John Elias. And his brother at the time, a well-known Freemason, dare I add, was a chap called Gerard Elias, who was the recorder of the courts, the main man in the courts in South Wales. So we can see the link. Right. Gerard Elias has literally gone on now. He's a QC and a well-known Freemason, and he now acts as the scrutiny manager within the Welsh Assembly government. So they've got a lot of things protected here, but, you know, the dots can join quite easily right. on a lot of things.
Is this a, would you find, and I want to get onto the whole subject of the common law court, and but do you find this a common thing, the kidnapping, the trafficking of children by government services in England?
We know it's going on, certainly. I mean, the United Kingdom itself, as far as, you know, the kidnapping and trafficking of children, I believe, if my memory is correct, it was Slovakia and Slovenia have started legal action against the United Kingdom government for the amount of children that are being basically taken by social services and trafficked across Europe and the rest of the world. So, yes, it's a very, very high endemic thing that's going on, unfortunately, with our government across here.
Now, did you, when in terms of the Wales Common Law Court, is this something that convened in response to this issue, or was it for other reasons?
The Wales Common Law Court, of which I was a founder member, was basically started up on bequest of what happened or what so many people had heard about the Linda Lewis case, because, you know, the last few years, the publicity, I've been involved with the family now for 8 years, Kevin, and... How can I say, the awareness and everything we pump out there is under public interest law, which is one of the most important laws that we've still got in this country. It was started up to basically help the Linda Lewis case. I was one of the founder members of it, but the Common Law Court of Wales is still going. Without going into too much detail, there were a few difficulties with the Common Law Court of Wales, so we've actually moved away from the Common Law Court of Wales itself. Not just myself and Linda Lewis, but quite a lot of people. So we're using common law for, you know, to get remedy for Linda Lewis and her family. We're using common law quite strongly. There's a group of about 20 of us now. But we're not actually involved in the Common Law Court of Wales, but we certainly are using the power of common law.
Let me ask if any of the other moderators today want to have any questions for you, any comments. I hope they're all still on. Okay. Well, if any of you have comments, just jump in at any point. Kevin, one of the things I wanted to get into as well with you is, as our previous guest talked about how there seems to be a policy, they call it a baby for adoption protocol in hospitals, where mothers that are targeted by adoption agencies, basically they have a quota of number of babies they need every year. Certain mothers are then targeted by social services, and often these babies are seized at birth, literally, because even when they're still in the womb, they're slated to be grabbed as soon as they're born and trafficked through the adoption agencies. Do you have experience of that kind of thing going on in England?
Absolutely. It's going on all throughout the country, and it's funny you've come down this line, Kevin, because I don't know if you're aware of a study that was done in Sweden called the Rhetoric case. I can put the link into you later, but yes, indeed, I'm currently dealing, or one of my team is dealing with looking at common law remedy for a baby that was taken and put out for forced adoption at birth. Story very quickly was that they lived in England in, I think it was West Sussex, and the son had had a child before with his previous partner, and there were a few little incidents there that had classed him and his previous partner as low risk. Now, nothing happened with social services out in England, and you know, the child was fine, it stayed with the mother. They eventually split up, and this gentleman got involved with a new partner who was expecting a baby, and because they'd had a little bit of difficulty before with the firstborn, they did what I would have thought would have been a very sensible thing and decided to move down to South Wales, where they could be next to his mother and the future grandmother and the rest of the family. Now, it's quite amazing that when they moved down to the same area, the same council that kidnapped Linda Lewis's daughter, Neath Patalbert Council, on arrival, without ever having been seen by a social worker, the risk status, Kevin, went from low risk in England to high risk in South Wales, and nobody'd actually contacted or even seen the potential parents. And no matter what they said and did, social services concocted this, you know, totally fabricated false story. And at birth, as soon as the baby came out of the mother, the baby was taken away. Now, you know, there were, I think, probably a dozen members of the family, grandparents, you know, aunties, uncles, cousins, who'd all said that they would keep the baby happily. Even the father and the mother said, if that's a problem, we'll move back out of the area if you think the baby's at risk. But no way on earth was the court having it. And the baby was taken for adoption and is now with... you know, adopted parents, but we reckon now we understand the going rate for adoption of a white baby, healthy baby, in South Wales is £44,000 to the local authority.
Kevin, we just had a question actually from Debbie, who was preceded you as a guest on the show. She said, ask Kevin if he knows if these babies are being vaccinated or drugged.
I don't know for definite if they're being vaccinated or drugged, Kevin. My suspicion is yes, they are. I believe personally, and some of the research that I've done points towards a lot of adopted babies are going into medical research for vaccinations. I haven't done enough research on it personally to say categorically yes, but my suspicions would go down that line.
It brings up a whole other sphere of this, which is use of babies experimentally and also in cultic rituals. This is, you know, something people find it hard to accept at first, but we do know, especially in England with the Jimmy Savile revelations and all that, that this stuff does go on. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, I can remember speaking to Brian Gerrish, who I'm sure you know, Kevin, many, many years ago, and the figures that Brian quoted to me then was that 64,000 children go missing in the United Kingdom every year. Now, these are not children that are actually placed into care. These are basically children that disappear off the face of the earth, off the map, and nobody has any idea where they go to. You know, as things come out of the dark and come out into the light, we can see that there are child sacrifices going on. There is great satanic, you know, rings, paedophile rings, etc. in the United Kingdom. But the last figures, and I'm going back probably about 3 or 4 years, and Brian said that he reckoned there were 64,000 children who just basically disappear off the face of the earth. And what's most disturbing is that nobody's actually looking for them. The police are not interested. Nobody seems to be bothered. And these are ones that are not escaping from being put into local authority care. These are just children that basically disappear and are never seen again.
Yeah. Any comments from any of the other moderators? Dan? Carol, anybody? I keep offering. Kevin, one of the, you know, we could go on for hours on this one topic alone, but these rings clearly are international in scope. And one of the things, and, you know, you keep approaching from different angles, you keep coming across the same evidence, but there's a very strong link between England and Canada in terms of the child trafficking and involving fairly prominent people. I'm wondering if, in the course of the work you've done, have you seen references come up to, you know, the kind of the international nature of what's going on? It isn't just elites in England or Canada, but there seems to be a whole international network at work.
Well, it certainly is a global network, you know, that's doing this sort of stuff. You know, I mentioned earlier, I think it's Slovakia and Slovenia are taking action against the United Kingdom for their treatment and stealing of children from themselves. We seem to be, and Belgium is another country that seems to be coming up quite frequently, Belgium and Holland, as far as child abuse goes. So I believe it's a global problem that children are basically being taken out of this country and put into forced adoption throughout the world, Kevin, never to be seen again by their parents. It does seem to be a pattern, but it's a global thing, my friend.
Yeah. Now, another question from Debbie. How are these children getting passports, getting on planes and leaving the country, and with who?
Well, that's a very good question. Considering the Foreign Office and the Home Office and the Attorney General in the Linda Lewis case are all denying any knowledge of how, you know, social workers were able to go across to America. And how did they obtain a passport in a different name? You know, this is opening a big can of worms. Now, we have been told, basically, when Linda was mentioned it to a chap, and I won't name him because we might have to subpoena him at a later date, when she went into the Foreign Office, she said to him, she said, it was this person who made this call, wasn't it? And he said, Miss Lewis, I can't say, but I'm telling you now, your child was kidnapped. on a phone call from government. So I don't know exactly how the passports are being given to these children, whether in false names, real names, or, you know, the future parents' name. But certainly the stench of government, Kevin, is where this is all coming from.
Right. And, of course, one of the things we found, Kev, is in the course of this research, we find that there's big money and corporate interest behind these rings as well. I got that first taste of that when I was deported from Stansted Airport, not by the border agency, but by a company called Reliance Limited, which operates the border agencies now in partnership with the government, just like prisons are privatized, armies are privatized. So I'm wondering that, you know, if we follow the money in this and we find out exactly who is funding it, that could be another, you know, kind of a route to go.
Well, everything in the United Kingdom now, including the United Kingdom itself, Kevin, is a corporation. You know, we don't even have local authorities, local councils, who they masquerade as a, you know, a council there to provide service for the council taxpayers. But they're all corporations. Everything we have is a corporation. Now, you mentioned Reliance. We've got G4S coming across here and Sodexo looking at the prison services as well. And, of course, the research you do on it, the more you look at it, you'll find prominent cabinet members and members of government as shareholders or directors, etc., of these people. What's happening is the country is being raped, financially raped by, you know, our assets, which belong to the people, are being sold off to, how can I put it, politicians and banker friends. By people in government. It's genocide, really. It's financial genocide. We have, again, across here, the false scenario of austerity, where we all know that there's money available, but everybody at the bottom of the scale is having, you know, the disabled are having will have benefit cuts, the unemployed will have benefit cuts. We're coming into, for want of a better word, a Nazi system across here. And it's worrying, it's concerning, but, you know, the optimism I've got about this is, Kevin, is that, you know, going back 10 years ago, we wouldn't have known what we're doing, but the level of awakening that's coming, I find, is immense.
That's true.
You know, I'm a spiritual man, Kevin, and I believe the Holy Spirit is moving very quickly, and I mean globally, not just in the United Kingdom, and, you know, the level of awareness, and I don't particularly like the term waking up, but the amount of people we're coming to the point of saying now, no more, no more, is gaining a massive momentum.
It's true. It's like the worst and the best is all coming out at once. And it raises a very important point, this whole thing, and I want your comments about this too. As the system becomes more corporatized, run by private interests, we're not obligated to have any allegiance to these institutions. I mean, that's our take on at least on this side of the water, that we never ended in any kind of contract with these corporate agencies. So what authority do they have over those? Can we simply walk away and assert our own common law jurisdiction?
Well, we're imposing our own common law jurisdiction as best we can, certainly in South Wales. And I know other groups in different parts of the United Kingdom are doing so. But the main thing that people are doing, and we're actually doing this in our thousands now, Kevin, is the withdrawal of consent. Right. To any acts and statutes, etc., that are being, you know, legislation that's coming out of government. I'm pushing the point quite quickly that the highest law that we have in this land is common law, and everything else comes below that. Now, you know, the acts and statutes that they keep putting across to us, and there's a saying, isn't there, that the more acts and statutes that the government needs to enforce, the more corrupt that government is. And, you know, I'm coming back to the awakening thing that so many people now are taking back control of their lives. Right. For example, you know, we've had a lot of success with the non-payment of TV license across here, which is basically a non-contract thing. And people are saying, you know, I don't want a contract with you. Just literally go away. You've no authority over me. You know, some remarkable things have been happening that I've been pushing forward. Parking tickets, you know, people who park. I mean, one woman went into a shop for 10 seconds to get a paper. A traffic warden was hiding behind a tree. £70 fine, you know, please pay this within 28 days. Got a phone call from her mother, actually, and she said, well, what do we do with it? I said, just put no contract across it, two lines and no contract in the middle. 3 days later, the local authority wrote back and said, the parking ticket's cancelled.
Right.
So, you know, the great scam of having a red letter from somebody on the pretense that they've always got away with before, that this is actually a bill that you owe us money, is going. It's not. It's an invite to offer into contract to pay money if you want to. We're getting around this, Kevin. You know, people are having debts cancelled. You know, we're doing a lot of work on class actions regarding the fraudulent mortgage system across here.
Right.
You know, how finance companies don't actually lend you one penny. You create your own money. So, you know, the level of awareness is it's very, very encouraging. And every day seems as if, you know, we're all getting a step further into of where we should be, you know, and that is basically the withdrawal of consent and lawful rebellion, which when governments are corrupt, it's our duty to actually enter into lawful rebellion.
Well, that's what we did over here, 1776.
In 2015, it's coming across here as well, Kev.
You know, when you talk about withdrawal of consent, is that when people are listening, they often say, well, how do we do it? Is this what you're talking about, like nullifying fraudulent bills and that kind of thing, or does it have other aspects?
Well, it is not the nullifying of fraudulent bills, etc. I mean, I can let you into, well, it's not a secret. I mean, I said I haven't paid a TV license in 7 years. I've never paid water rates. The reason that is a corporation puts water into your home and wants to charge you for poison water loaded up with, fluoride and other stuff in it. The last time they came to my door, I actually withdrew all implied rights of access from the water company. And I said, water's actually free. And I said, if Jesus wants to knock on my door and God with a bill, I'll pay him. But you've got no right to do so. The other little trick, well, it's not a trick. I mean, it's perfectly, we're going on about consent. I mean, when I moved into my property, obviously the water supply was here. If they ever knock my door again, they're going to have to pay me £10,000 because I made it quite clear to them that they have their product in my property without my consent, and they've got a nerve trying to charge me for it. So I gave the guy a little schedule, said the implied rights of access, you ever contact me again, your product is in my property without my consent, and for you having it here, I'm going to charge you £10,000 a year for having it in my property.
Right.
And I'll never get anything now for 8 years.
Well, you know, it's amazing how the entire system runs on fraud and implied consent on our part. All we have to do is say, no, you can imply consent. I withdraw consent. Is it really that simple?
Well, the whole system's geared up, isn't it, Kevin, when you look at it? We don't really have to look at it in depth, is that they're manufacturing our consent without our knowledge.
Right.
And, you know, when we're onto them on this, it's really quite easy to get out of. You know, to be honest with you, I miss the TV license guy calling every now and again because I used to have a lot of fun with him. But, it's okay. It's something I've got for, how can I say, enforcing my lawful right to, you know, to be left in peace and get on with my life and not pay money or be, you know, scammed out of money by, fraudulent corporations. One of the biggest things a lot of people have not, I know there's thousands of people in South Wales, who don't pay the TV license anymore, and they quite say, I'm sorry, mate, you know, we don't fund paedophilia in this thing because of the BBC. And just basically bang the door closed and goodbye, thank you very much for calling, you know?
Well, you've got a long, fine tradition of rebellion there in Wales, so that's something we could talk about some other time, some of the Welsh history I would love you to get into. But,
absolutely no problem at all there. But, we're all waking up. I mean, we're even looking at the court system. And, I was speaking to Linda Lewis earlier on this afternoon on her case. And, the court system in the United Kingdom, well, it's specifically in South Wales, it's actually totally, totally endemically corrupt.
Right.
And we were looking, we held a grand jury on one aspect of the Linda Lewis case about 2 months ago, Kevin, where, you know, the grand jury found that there was a case to answer regarding the kidnapping of a daughter by Neath Talbot Council. And I'm just looking at some notes here. You know, I handed in a criminal private prosecution on Linda Lewis's behalf to the Magistrates Court in Swansea on the 9th of June of this year. We did not hear anything at all, and we found out later, I queried it from one of the court officers there, and I call them the gatekeepers, because they are working outside of their authority. This is basically a court solicitor who said that they would hand it to a Judge Neil Thomas when he came back on off holiday, and I will be back in touch. Now, of course, the courts are always, Kevin, okay? You know, the judges and the court people are public servants, so we have authority. We should actually be able to, you know, a judge on the day. That didn't happen. Now, cutting a long story short, the woman who sent me the email, when I questioned her a few days back as to why it's taken so long, it came back with an automatic response saying, I'm on holiday until the 30th of June, which is Tuesday. I'm not forwarding my emails on to anybody, so therefore just contact another member of staff. And I thought, well, hold on a second. This is perverting the course of justice and certainly maladministration in public office. But, you know, the other funny thing about it, the judge that she named said, well, you know, I'm going to put it straight in front of him when he comes back on holiday. It's District Judge Neil Thomas, I think his name was. But just doing a little bit of a look around, Kevin, just to brief myself, you know, for your show tonight. This guy's been actually sentenced people on the 25th, 3 days ago. So he's back on holiday, but the other one's gone from holiday and no paperwork's been passed over. So
Kevin, unfortunately, Kev, we're running out of time. We have 2 minutes left. I'm really sorry about this. We only have an hour with each show. But I really appreciate this. I'd like you to come back very soon. You know, along with Debbie again, your issues overlap so much. And so thank you for coming on. Do you have a website you want to share or anything before we go?
Yeah, anybody who wants to look at the Linda Lewis, Justice for Linda Lewis campaign, we're literally worldwide now, Kevin, thanks to like people yourself and, you know, other radio stations, TV stations. My website is www.cllrkevinedwards.blogspot.co.uk.
Thank you, Kevin. We'll talk to you again very soon. Thanks for coming on with us. And for the listeners, we'll be back here next week, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And follow especially a breaking news story today at itccs.org. We're going to comment on that again very soon. It's very important evidence of the continued cover-up of genocide in Canada at itccs.org. Until next week, be strong and be clear.